This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. It's no secret that urban voters lean pretty heavily Democratic. And that's not just for pure policy reasons. A lot of people who grew up in cities have parents and grandparents who voted Democratic. But our democracy is supposed to be an open game where the best ideas and the most effective organizing are supposed to win out. And in some ways, that means Republicans have had an opportunity for a long time to win over urban voters. And that could be especially true now, since high costs and a sunken Build Back Better deal are proving pretty poor performances for Democrats in Washington. But of course, we know people are creatures of habit, especially when it comes to voting. It's really difficult to convince people to be open to the other party, opposite ideas, different ways of thinking. And of course, all of this fits into the context of real tensions that exist in our country. Things like economic and racial equality, the differences between the two parties on those issues, of course, affect urban voters differently than they do people who live in other places. And they shape the way that people make decisions at the ballot box. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about how Democrats might be able to win more rural voters on this program. Talked about things that they could emphasize in their ideas and their platforms that might appeal to rural voters, things that they don't really talk as much about right now. Now we want to flip the coin or reverse the glass on that conversation. And we've got an analyst with us to talk about the reverse possibility, how Republicans can win over urban voters. Here to talk with us about this is Michael Hendricks. He's a senior fellow and director of state and local policy at the Manhattan Institute, a conservative think tank in New York. Michael, welcome to Detroit Today.
It's great to be with you.
Yes, great to have you here. So you say that most suburban and urban voters are registered as Democrats, but they may not always vote that way. Why? And talk about what they're looking for that may have them a bit disillusioned with the Democratic Party.
Well, when we talk about urban America, we're talking about 80% of America. If we need big city America, maybe 20%, still huge numbers, make up a big chunk of the economy. And yes, these Americans, our neighbors in many cases, have been completely governed by Democrats. The voters are overwhelmingly Democrat, and they've become even more so, especially since 2000. 2000 was really a realignment election. And basically for decades, urban America has become more and more Democratic, rural America more and more Republican. Probably one of the best predictors of how someone's going to vote is their proximity to a Whole Foods or a Cracker Barrel. Whole Foods more Democratic, Cracker Barrel more Republican. But most recently, we've also seen, I think, a failure of Democratic governance. So just look at the polls right now. What are people concerned about? Housing inflation, homelessness, crime woes, lagging educational outcomes for their kids, and just practical management issues at the local level, traffic fatalities, parks. Poll after poll shows that regardless of party, regardless even of race or ethnicity, Americans are deeply concerned with these cost, crime, and classroom issues, and especially so at the urban level. And I think that this creates an opening for an urban conservative agenda and a competition of ideas.
So you mentioned race and economics and inequality, and I think it's impossible to have this conversation, honestly, without talking about those things. And I'm going to just throw this out there. I think if you ask a lot of folks who live in cities, a lot of African Americans who live in cities, what the Republican Party could do to appeal to them, the first thing they would say is, well, stop being racist. And I know that's a pretty gross oversimplification of a lot of really complex policy issues, But there is this notion that I think maybe to put it in a more nuanced fashion, that the idea of the inequality that we live with, the idea of the unfairness that affects so many people, is just not a top priority for the Republican Party. That they care more about other things, and that that their voters want them to focus on these other things rather than dealing with inequality. So, in your analysis, how do you confront that reality, and how do you kind of answer that claim about what's wrong with the appeal of the Republican Party to urban voters?
Well, you're absolutely right that concerns over racial injustices, of inequality, those are deeply, deeply concerning to America's non-white communities. And I think it's interesting, though, to look at some of the recent polling, and we're seeing other questions, other divides emerge. So there's a recent New York Times Siena poll, and it found an interesting divide, not one of race per se, but one of class, one of education, that seems to be a deeper divide even than that of race, race being often a deep, long-running divide. If you are a Black American, you were historically, since at least the 1960s, been much more likely to vote Democratic, white more Republican. But there's another divide emerging that seems to be a greater predictor of how one votes. So, again, going back to that poll, we found that affluent voters are much more concerned about things like gun control and abortion rights. Working class voters are much more concerned on inflation and the economy. And what we're really seeing, not just in this poll, in our polling as well at the Manhattan Institute, is that Democrats are becoming the party of the educated, Republicans the party of the working class. And there are a lot of working class voters of all stripes in America, and especially in urban America. And that once the Republican Party, as the Republican Party becomes the party of the working class, that really is white and non-white combined. So that's one interesting fact. The other is that when you talk to urban America about the issues, you say, okay, strip away party ideology, what are you actually concerned about? You find that there's a lot of shared concerns over things like crime, high cost of living, education issues that, again, separate from party ID, there's actually a lot of unity on. We call this a metropolitan majority, a sort of diverse, multi-ethnic majority coalition that on local issues actually shares a lot of unity. You know, this is something where, you know, look at something like welfare. You have a lot of working class Democrats, particularly urban voters, voters of color, who don't think of themselves as being Republicans, who are actually pretty moralistic when it comes to the welfare state, who are allergic to the idea of a welfare state that's overly permissive, overly generous. You would not see that necessarily from how they vote, but once you actually dig into what they really believe, you see that they don't really fit into neat party buckets. And I think that's an opportunity, and we're really seeing that beginning to emerge in actual elections. Look at a place like San Francisco. You saw disillusioned Asian American Democrats recall progressive school board members, recall their progressive district attorney because of these failures of governance, because they actually agree with people regardless of their race, regardless of their party. They agree that something needs to change. And I think that's really going to make a big difference in the years ahead.
Yeah. We see some of that disillusionment as well playing out in Chicago with Lori Lightfoot, who's the mayor there, being under enormous fire for the things that are going, quote unquote, wrong in Chicago. I mean, it's been a really violent stretch in the city, more so than it had been in recent decades. They're losing jobs and businesses at a really fast clip. And you see a lot of progressive voters and interest groups saying, hey, wait a second. We like you in the global sense, but the job you're doing doesn't quite pass muster for us. But at the same time, that's only half of the equation here. I mean, the disillusionment with Democrats or Democratic governance is only the opening of the door to get it all the way open and to walk through it. You know, Republicans have to have an answer. They have to have a different set of ideas that would appeal to these folks. What do you say about how they do that and how different perhaps that looks than the message that we hear from them right now?
Right, absolutely. There is a sense that something is broken in the American life today, that the elected leaders or the elites are not really being responsive to the concerns of everyday Americans. And this is a feeling, a sense on both left and right. But when you have a party of the non-elites, which is what the Republican Party is sort of becoming, and you have a kind of elected class who are the elites, the Republicans are kind of becoming this voice of the non-elites, of the people who are kind of shut out of power. And that is going to play out in a lot of different ways in different communities. I think the right has to be careful, especially the sort of post-liberal, anti-liberal right, to be careful to be responsive to the concrete quality of life challenges that people are facing. And that also recognize not only is the right becomes a party of the non-elite, that the right becoming associated with a lot of diversification. You know, Republicans are becoming more working class, but also a little more multiracial. Democrats are becoming more elite and a little more white. And so as that plays out, I think having a platform that is, yes, very responsive to national concerns, but also having a very local focus is going to become incredibly important. And some of the issues, one way that this may be easier for the right, is that a lot of the issues that are becoming salient are directly addressed at the local level. So pick housing as a great example. You know, places like New York City, San Francisco, Chicago, to a lesser degree, they've been very expensive relative to the rest of America, and only more so as the decades have worn on, past two decades especially. But now we're in a situation where, you know, once you incorporate increase in home prices, once you look at the increase in mortgage interest rates, a place like Tampa has become 50% more expensive when it comes to housing in just the past year. When it comes to actually what you have to spend to buy a home, that's outrageous. Starter homes are basically dead in America. And the Republicans and conservatives generally should have a response to this, saying, look, we want to be pro-family, pro-starter home, pro-worker, to say we want to loosen the regulations at the local level, which predominantly put in place by Democrats, that prevent starter homes from being built, that make it impossible for affordable apartments to be built, that instead only offer, that often a lot of left-wing folks offer, that only offer exclusive, all segregated by their very nature, housing that is capital A affordable or public housing that often is very difficult to access, never built in enough quantities, and you have to wait on lists that last 5, 10, 20 years before you can get on them. That's not a real solution. Republicans should have real solutions to those housing concerns that say we want to open up the housing market to people of all backgrounds, but especially young, hardworking families that are just trying to get a leg up. You know, education, another big one, being pro-parent. When it comes to these concerns of race or of cultural war issues, being one that's pro-America and that seeks cultural harmony. And then really just saying, look, as we focus on these local issues, we want to make sure that the best ideas win out. We want to give a real competition of ideas, even if the Republican Party loses at the local level. Just simply showing up in neighborhoods and at the ballot box, that makes a huge, huge difference and should in many ways provoke the Democrats to compete for those voters, for those working class voters of all races and ethnicities, of all backgrounds, and say, look, we're going to be a party for you as well.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this really interesting conversation with Michael Hendricks about the idea that Republicans and conservatives could make a better case to urban voters. We want to hear from you as well during the conversation. Are you a voter in Detroit who's maybe dissatisfied with the choices that we have on the ballot? Would you consider supporting another party other than the Democratic Party? And if you would, what would that party have to do to get your vote? What would Republicans have to change about the party, about their candidates, about their message in order to get you to think about them as possibilities? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page, put comments there, or you can go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your place for open dialogue.
The music you love.
Real news and in-depth analysis.
And cultural experiences. The sound of Detroit.
101.9 WDET is your public radio station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest is Michael Hendricks, Senior Fellow and Director of State and Local Policy at the Manhattan Institute, a conservative think tank in New York. We're talking about the idea of Republicans perhaps trying to appeal more to urban voters. Is that possible? What would they have to do if they were going to try to do that? How would they have to change their candidates, their message, their strategy? We want to hear from you as well. Tell us if you live here in Detroit or other urban areas. What would Republicans have to do to appeal to you for your vote? What are the things that you're looking for in candidates that you might find among Republican hopefuls? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter, put comments there. We'll work you into the conversation. Michael, we've had a couple of listeners on social media push back against the something you said earlier, which is that Republicans are becoming the party of the working class while Democrats are becoming the party of the elite. Of course, we don't think of it that way in cities like Detroit, right? This is a city full of working class and poor people who vote overwhelmingly Democratic. You go to Oakland County, the wealthiest jurisdiction in Michigan, and you find more votes for Donald Trump there than you do in other places. So what's the, I guess, what's the evidence for what you're saying? And can you fill us in, I guess, a little more on what you mean by working class versus elite?
Well, sure. So these are recent findings over the past couple of years. There's been this marked change, a realignment in the parties. And so what's really interesting is when you dig into what voters of both parties believe and what the politicians who speak for them, to them, say, we're seeing this shift. So the Democratic Party is becoming, on net, nationwide, a lot more educated, or a lot likelier to be educated. And the Democratic Party is also doing much better than ever before in wider and more educated communities. Well, at the same time, we're seeing this really fascinating shift on the right, the Republican Party doing much better than ever before, and often by double-digit percentages in non-white communities, the most remarkable being in Hispanic and Latino communities. We saw this in the most recent presidential election in places like South Texas and South Florida. And in what we're seeing in recent polls is that this was not a one-off blip. That those trends in the last election are only deepening. Hispanic voters are turning away, Hispanic and Latino voters are turning away the Democratic Party in a serious way. And it's much more likely that we're seeing folks who maybe do not have a college degree, much more likely to see them say that they want to vote Republican or are voting Republican. We're seeing that among Hispanic and Latinos. We're also seeing that among Asian American voters. And it's really beginning to bubble up, not even as much at the national level just yet, but at the local level in places like California. We're also seeing that in New York, where they're beginning to vote, not even necessarily always Republican. There are not as many Republican options in New York, but beginning to vote for a lot more moderate candidates on the Democratic side. The Democratic side is sort of become, it contains multitudes in some big cities like New York. And then we're also seeing among black voters in America an interesting shift where they're saying, look, what we value, what we believe in, we're not seeing that as always reflected in what the Democratic Party today, becoming more progressive, or at least more responsive to the progressive base, a Democratic Party that's becoming more sort of whiter and more educated. We're not seeing them really reflect our concerns on, like, bread and butter issues, cost of living, quality of life, crime issues. They're saying, you're not really responsive to that. You're talking over our heads. You're talking about a lot of culture war issues that are not really responsive, like on abortion and gun rights. They're not really responsive to the day-to-day concerns that we have. What do you have to do for us on cost, crime, and classroom issues? And too often, the answer is not much. And so this is a call not just to the Republican Party to be responsive to who is now coming into their party. It's also a call for the Democratic Party to be responsive to who they may be losing and making sure that they're not, that they're, as they're being responsive to their more progressive base, they're not losing the diverse base that they've really depended upon for so many decades.
Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones, which are full right now, but we'll try to get you in if you call. Also, you can go to Facebook and Twitter, put comments there. Let's go to Christopher in Detroit. Christopher, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hey.
What's on my mind is the play of politics and the whole thing that this is the United States of America. We are United States citizens. America is at least two continents, and we need to remove race from public office and United States agency to deal with this problem, because white nationalism is basically controlling the policy, economy, and politics. So when we play into race, then we are playing into systematic racism.
Hmm.
And in doing so, in capitalism, because it's set up in a way that we cannot actually fully participate in the way that they are engaging with the system and how we are engaging with the system as so-called working class and the elites, because the so-called disabled aren't even counted as whole persons or even included in the system.
Yeah.
Now, the
Christopher,
I
really appreciate the call and that perspective. I mean, I think that's a really, again, important dimension of all of this, which is race and the rise in the Republican Party of the defense of white nationalism, in some cases just outright aggressive advocacy of white nationalism. Michael Hendricks, again, what are we as urban voters to make of a party that is becoming more racialized, the Republican Party, and how can you ever think that they might appeal to urban voters who are overwhelmingly black and brown?
Well, I think what we're seeing across parties is a tendency to raise the salience of race in America. And there can be good reasons for that, bad reasons for that, but raising the salience of race in America and embracing kind of race consciousness in public policy and culture has been something that we've seen mark the American experience, particularly over the past couple of years. And, you know, there are people who are very bright and well-meaning doing that. There's also people who have bad intentions doing that. I think one of the things that my boss, Raihan Salam, has really been arguing, and you can read his piece on this in The Atlantic, is saying that the kind of race essentialism is really polarizing. And it really, as he said, does not give us an accurate view of the rich complexity in American life, of American ethnic life, that there is an ethnic life separate even or above these kind of racial divides. And that kind of like amazing melting pot that is America, we lose that. We lose that beautiful vision as we begin to divide people up, as we racialize everything in America. And I think that what we're trying to articulate at Manhattan Institute is a vision for something even more that tries to overcome ethnic and cultural divides by offering, constructing, unifying alternatives, an alternative to that kind of divisiveness that is becoming so pervasive in America's elite educational, cultural, and corporate institutions. That kind of civic harmony, that kind of vision for an alternative to race essentialism is something that we're really hopeful about and trying to push regardless of party.
Okay, Michael Hendricks, I would really love to keep going with you on this, and we've got a lot of callers, too, who seem interested in debating this issue with you, but of course we have run out of time on the program, but I really want to thank you for coming by. I think it was a really interesting conversation, and I think we all learned a lot about what Republicans might be able to do to be more broadly appealing in urban areas. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
All right, that is going to do it for us today. You're going to want to be sure to come back tomorrow, and we're going to talk about a new book about George Floyd, his life and his legacy. And then we'll also talk about the Detroit Police Department and how it fits into the conversation about the relationships between those who live in our cities and those who police our cities. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.